Alex, kick us off whenever you're ready.
Batman.
Seth, kick us off whenever you're ready. Holy shit.
Alex, you said you had a good idea for the intro, and I should
have
fucking known.
I didn't
know.
Have a good idea. I just said I could do the intro.
I should have known that that's what you were going to do.
I can intro us. Yeah, I could just pump us right into the episode.
At least you didn't try and sing Something in the Way by Nirvana.
Okay, look. Hi, it's Space Castle, Clubhouse and Hours. I'm Seth, DT, and Alex Cole. We're going to talk about the Batman, and I have so many things to say. And for once, I'm the only one that liked the thing.
Molotov, Donghammer... part-time librarian, Winnebago thief. Okay, now we can move on.
Cool. Seth liked a thing?
I liked a thing, which I want to do.
Guess what? DT didn't like a thing.
DT didn't like a thing, which is also not super uncommon.
Guess what? I'm in the middle. On brand!
Okay, we're gonna talk about The Batman, so spoilers if you haven't seen it. It's great. I liked it a lot. It's not the best Batman ever put to film, but it is among them, in my opinion. I'm sure we'll get into deep, deep details about why.
That would be The Dark Knight.
Yeah, The Dark Knight's clearly the best Batman put to film, but...
No.
Oh, I'll fight you on... I will fight you right now.
Alex and I both looked up in our Zoom call and were like, what?
Take the gloves off, bud. Wrap your knuckles. Let's fucking go.
I'm just going to put this out there right now. The Dark Knight is the best Batman movie that's been committed to film. It is not the best Batman that's been committed to film.
That is why I specifically said best Batman put to film.
Yeah, put to film. The movie.
It's not the best Batman.
No, not Batman. Batman movie.
Put to film.
Okay. Fine. We can move on.
So you agree? You agree now?
I don't love the character of Batman in The Dark Knight, but I think as a Batman movie, it is the best Batman movie that has been made up to this point. Sure.
Well, it's because it's a Joker movie.
Well, sure. Exactly. Yeah.
We're going to have to talk about this another time.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah.
Or maybe we'll just talk about it now.
Let's talk about this movie.
The Batman, directed by Matt Reeves, who broke out into the scene by doing Cloverfield. This movie came out in 2022. Cinematographer was Greg Fraser, who you gentlemen might know as the cinematographer for Dune, and he won his very first Academy Award by doing Dune.
Well deserved.
Yeah, score was done by Michael Giacchino, who's become like the John Williams of Marvel movies, I guess, if you really want to draw an allegory between the two. Robert Pattinson plays Batman and Bruce Wayne. Zoe Kravitz plays Selina Kyle. Paul Dano plays Riddler. Jeffrey Wright, who I think is probably the most inspired choice in his movie, plays Jim Gordon, Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, I love that.
John Turturro plays Carmine Falcone. And Colin Farrell puts on a tour de fucking force as the Penguin.
Dude, and you forgot, for me, the most surprising casting. Because again, no, I saw no trailers, no cast. I didn't know anything about this except Arpats was in it.
Is it Peter Skarsgård?
Nope. You forgot Andy Serkis.
Oh, well, Alfred is a non-entity in this movie, despite the fact that Andy Serkis is just fucking lovely in everything he does. But I apologize, because I do love Andy Serkis, and he does deserve his dues. So, yeah.
Yes, I tend to agree he was deeply underutilized. However, Andy Serkis plays a goddamn great Alfred. I think that's if he had more of a role to play here...
If he had anything at all to do besides get blown up, yeah.
He does the brooding bits really well. Like, there's that scene early on in the movie where Bruce is talking about you're not my father, and you're like, in your at least for me, in my mind, I was like, but he is your father figure. Like, he kind of is your dad.
That's what Bruce realizes in the hospital. But here's the thing is this movie, unlike a lot of other Batman movies, where Batman is portrayed as an mostly equal alter ego to Bruce Wayne. That's not what this movie is. This movie is depicting Bruce Wayne and Batman as Batman with a little sliver of Bruce Wayne left. Mm-hmm. Where Andy Serkis's Alfred is the humanity of Bruce Wayne that's left.
It's a really insightful take, actually. I agree with that. It's very much that it is Batman, and Bruce is Batman. Like, at least the way the movie depicts it, he does not want to be Bruce. He wants to be Batman.
Yeah.
So that he can not even save the city. It's like, he's not going to protect Gotham. He's just trying to figure shit out.
Alfred is the anchor point to all that's left of Bruce Wayne.
Fair.
And I think they do great, which is why, like, yeah, I've seen people say that, like, Andy Serkis's Alfred didn't have a lot to do in this movie, but that's not the point. The point was his existence, that, like, that was why he was there. So he killed it and fulfilled the entirety of his role, because his whole role is to be all that's left of Bruce Wayne. And that's all he is. And it's great.
We jumped right into the nitty gritty, and I feel like we should paint some broad strokes first.
Yeah, I feel like we should put some structure to this episode, because we can go off on a million tangents without actually summarizing this movie.
Yeah, so DT, give me some scaffolding as far as the bad news.
It's not bad. It's just a lot of pretty good parts that, and I'm paraphrasing something that our friend Other Seth, who's awesome and really, really insightful when it comes to movies, he said that it never adds up to some of its parts. And I completely agree with that, where we've got a lot of really good things in this movie.
Yes.
But none of it cohesively comes together in the whole of a really good movie. There are bits and pieces in this movie. There are moments in this movie that are great. The movie itself is, I don't want to call it a noble failure, because I don't think it's a failure, but it doesn't succeed the way it thinks or wants to succeed. It's hard to call this movie anything, really, because I don't want to call it a misfire, because that's not doing the movie justice, because it's clearly a labor of love. This is, you know, a group of people who genuinely care about these characters. You can tell there's way more reverence done to the character of Batman, the city of Gotham City, the dynamics between the characters, than Zack Snyder could ever fucking hope to pull out of his ass.
100% agree.
Batman does not kill anybody in this movie, which is like step one in the right direction. But, okay, here's the good. The good is Robert Pattinson was inspired casting as Bruce Wayne / Batman. I love his portrayal of both sides of that role. We don't get the crazy, stupid, raspy voice that we got from Christian Bale's Batman. This is a conflicted and angry and vengeful Bruce Wayne who is not quite fully Batman. I disagree with Seth. I don't think he's fully absorbed into the Batman persona, but I think he's getting there. What he is right now is he's angry, and Batman is an outlet for the anger. And it's not going to be until really the last act of the movie where he discovers that Batman doesn't need to be a blunt force object, he needs to be a symbol, that he will actually become fully Batman. So there's that. Selina Kyle, played by Zoe Kravitz, is just fucking luminescent in this movie. She's luminescent. She is
spectacular,
gorgeous, and she plays the femme fatale role just to a fucking T. Like, she is on fire. She just lights up the screen every time she's in a movie. Like I said before, Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon was inspired fucking casting.
So good.
Not a ton for Jim Gordon to do in this movie. Probably far less than there was in even like the Nolan movies with Gary Oldman playing Jim Gordon. But it's a great fucking character. And Jeffrey Wright actually plays it to a T. Like, I love the class and the conflict between wanting to be Batman's friend, but also wanting to be a cop, and being torn between the world of like vigilantism is actually the way to fix Gotham, but he's also like a not crooked cop, like one of the few cops that aren't crooked. And Jeffrey Wright, if you've seen Jeffrey Wright in anything he's done, he plays nuance so fucking well. Like, I just saw The French Dispatch for the first time because Seth basically made me watch it.
He said, you need to watch this.
He didn't make me watch it. Like, I fucking love Wes Anderson movies, but one of my favorite bits in The French Dispatch is Jeffrey Wright, because he plays every single character with such nuance, even in the Bond movies. Like, he's just an incredibly awesome, nuanced character actor. He's just fucking amazing. Going down the rest of the cast, John Turturro plays Carmine Falcone. Very, very, very understated role versus, you know, what was done with The Dark Knight, where Falcone was like this over the top, like, hey, forget about it type of monster thing.
I'm an Italian.
Turturro brought a proper, like, level of fear to the role.
Yeah.
Which just felt more lived in. It was more real.
Absolutely.
This is a person.
The whole film is that way.
And then rounding out the cast is Colin Farrell, who just absolutely fucking disappears. in his performance of Al Pacino as the Penguin. And I'm not saying that as a slight, because you completely fucking forget that Colin Farrell is in this movie, because he just disappears. Like, the makeup work is phenomenal. His acting is phenomenal. Everybody in this fucking cast is just amazing and fantastic. Well, there's also Paul Dano as the Riddler. And the performance that Paul Dano gives is terrifying and frightening and great. But I fucking hate what they did with the character here. And that's where we get into the bad here, is you've got this amazing cast, you've got this amazing cinematography, you've got a pretty okay score that does its job as far as propelling the movie forward. But you've got a script that is just a lot of half-baked ideas and way too many fucking self-indulgent subplots that just don't really amount to enough to justify their existence in the movie. And it feels like a slog. It's too much, even for a 3-hour long movie. Everything could have been condensed. Everything could have gone through multiple more rewrites. Everything could have been streamlined. And even the important character beats, like the Riddler's clues and Batman's self-discovery and what his relationship to Selina means to his self-discovery and what Alfred means to him and how he's going to progress and grow into the hero he needs to be. Everything could have been done so much more succinctly and so much more directly, but instead the movie just largely feels aimless.
I could not agree with you less.
Please elaborate.
I'll just touch on one, lest this podcast becomes 3 hours long. This movie is slow and methodical with purpose. You said that the plot points, Riddler's whole like arc basically could have been way more succinct. A lot of that. I disagree, because that is a regular superhero movie. That's how that always works. You get short beats. Hey, superhero doesn't know what he's doing. Gets redeemed, stops the bad guy at the end. Woo. That is not what this movie is. This movie is a more complete story of what would happen in this sort of situation. You get the slow buildup. We don't even see Riddler's actions until like a half hour in. It's a slow buildup because there's lots of context that has to be delivered. And then you get, traditionally, the end of the movie, which is the end of a superhero movie, which is the Riddler being, in this case, spoiler alert, successful, and the fallout. And then when he gets caught is the beginning of the third act, basically.
Right.
Because it's more on either end for context. There is no traditional superhero movie three-act structure here. It's a more novel style three-act structure where you have context all the way through and on either end of the quote-unquote events.
But see, here's where we get into my next point. The Batman is, for all intents and purposes, pretty much just a lift of The Dark Knight. Even specifically in what you just described in that three-act structure, the true actual like catharsis and the actual denouement and the actual like forming of who the hero is happens after the main villain is done away with and captured and thrown aside. The entire fucking movie, like the structure of it all, and even like key beats, is just The Dark Knight. And that's one of the main issues I started having with the movie as it was progressing. You get superfluous stuff thrown in, and I hate to call it superfluous because, again, like, she was fucking amazing, but Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle, you could remove her from the movie entirely. You could remove the subplot with, again, spoiler alert, her being Carmine Falcone's daughter. You could remove that entirely. There's no impact on Batman's storyline. And it's novel that they're trying to tell multiple storylines that kind of intersect in this, but this isn't a fucking Quentin Tarantino movie, and it's not nearly good enough to be a Quentin Tarantino movie with all those intersecting plot points and whatnot. But too much of this could be pulled out. And when you keep pulling stuff out, all you're left with is basically just a remake of The Dark Knight. Straight up.
The main thing for me when I watched this was that the first 30 minutes of this movie are just set piece, set piece, set piece with narration laid over. And I wrote down that the first 30 minutes would have had the same effect without any dialogue or narration. So you could have showed me a movie wherein no dialogue happened in the first 30 minutes, and I would understand exactly what was happening for the entirety of the first half hour of this movie, which is what we're talking about, where you can cut so much of this out, but when I went back and I looked at it, the setting for this film is so good. Like, that's one of the things that I loved about it, is that it just finally feels like a comic book city. It's not like, this isn't New York with Gotham stamped over top of it, right? Or Chicago with Gotham stamped over it. Yeah, it's like, it's not just a city that we know where something is just like, wham, this is actually Gotham. No, this feels like a new comic book city. And credit to the production design, they absolutely crushed it. I think it looks amazing. And it feels amazing. It feels like you're in a comic book story. And that's one of my favorite things about this film, is that I feel like I'm watching a comic book brought to life.
Yeah, visually, the movie is fucking phenomenal. The editing, I am not in love with. But the cinematography is just absolutely stunning. And Greg Fraser just knocks it out of the park. Like, every frame of this movie is gorgeous. One of the shots that sticks out to me, oddly enough, one of the things I think is the best shot in the entirety of the film is the scene where the Riddler actually pops up in the back of the district attorney's car. And it goes completely out of focus because it's raining and we're seeing everything through the windshield. And the Riddler is attaching a bomb around his neck. But we don't know what's actually going on. All we're hearing is just the noises of the struggle and the DA who is high on drugs because he's been, you know, super stressed out because he thinks somebody's going to try and fucking kill him. Fucking guess what? But just the way that all we see is the rain streaking through the windshield of the car, and then the lights flashing on the collar. Just everything about this movie visually is stunning. Like, it's really, really fucking well shot.
Has a hard focus from behind the steering wheel. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to run through my notes really quick, okay? Because there aren't many, and I covered most of it just then. But what I wrote down was that I don't really like this version of the Riddler.
Yes, agreed.
And it's just because they made him into Jeffrey Dahmer, and that's it.
He's Jeffrey Dahmer and the Zodiac Killer mixed in, but then we end up finding out that he's actually just, like, autistic.
I don't know how you got that conclusion.
I remember there's a scene in the middle of the movie where the Batman finally confronts the Riddler, and it's in the jail cell at Arkham, and they're talking, and there's a really quick flip, and Paul Dano does it great, where he indicates the Riddler's shift from, we're in this together, we're doing this thing, we're making this thing together, and then wham, we're not. Because he realizes that Bruce is just not on board with him. Because before he was like, I know who you are, I know what we're doing, I know your alter ego, I know who you are actually, I know what you are about, and I think I understand, and that's why I did all these things. And then something shifts, whoom. And there's this big turning point. It's like one of the biggest linchpins in the movie. It's one of the biggest story flips in the entire script. But it just doesn't land quite right.
No. Like I said before, we go from the Riddler being like this menacing, scary figure. And then throughout the back end of the second half, or the second act into the third act, like you said, there's this shift in the Riddler. And it starts out like, they bust into his apartment. They find out he's basically like an internet incel. Like, he's on like internet forums, like 4chan, basically. Like, just he's a fucking...
A sociopath, yeah.
And then we get the scene of him in Arkham with Batman, and he's still got that menacing way about him. And he's, like you said, he's trying to talk to Batman, like, hey, we did this together. Like, you figured out all my riddles because I was writing to you because you were my blunt force object to get what I wanted done. And then when that doesn't go his way, he turns into... Again, I don't mean to be politically incorrect or, you know, be inappropriate with this, but he turns into an autistic child. He starts screaming and crying and moaning, and there's this really weird shift where once his illusion is broken that he's created for himself, he's shattered, and I did not like that portrayal. But that's just me being like a hardcore traditional Batman fan, where the Riddler was the smartest guy in the room and the only guy who could go toe-to-toe with him mentally was Batman. And here we learn that the Riddler is so good at his puzzles and whatnot is because he's autistic. He lives in his own head.
There was a whole section wherein he was like live broadcasting himself and like interacting with the folks that were tuning in and kind of like, I'm live. I'm on Twitch right now. I'm going to like go kill the Batman or whatever. It was weird. Like, it just,
hi guys. Thanks for the tip on the detonators. I'm like, what is this now? There's going to be think pieces on this movie eventually. And I don't want to be the guy who's the catalyst for that, but eventually somebody is going to catch on to the fact that the Riddler's autistic, and there's going to be think pieces about this movie where people are going to be like, why the fuck did they make an autistic kid the villain of this movie? And the thing that really stuck out to me, and I'm showing my work because Seth told me to do so, and then I'll show my work on something I said earlier too. The editing here is bloated, and another term I've seen used for this movie is flabby, where even the editing goes on for far too long. Like, there's the amazing, really well-done car chase between Batman and the Penguin, right? It's beautifully fucking shot. It's all orange and blacks, and Colin Farrell, you can tell, is having a blast with this, and everything's really suspenseful and really fucking dope, and the Batmobile looks and sounds fucking great. Batman slams into the fucking Penguin's car, knocks him over, flips over the car, and then you see that iconic shot from the trailer of Batman slowly walking up to the car and Penguin looking terrified. And that's where they should have fucking cut. And instead, we get this super fucking hilarious, awkward shot of like Batman like bending over and like looking down at him in the car. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, you don't want to see Batman itching his butt as he walks away.
Exactly. You don't want to see that casual, weird, awkward shit. You want to cut right at the heroic moment and have that moment land with impact. That's just visual filmmaking 101.
That's the point I was making, is that is what you would do in a superhero movie. This is not that.
This is a fucking superhero movie. But you don't need to show Batman awkwardly like bending down in his fucking tank suit to look at the Penguin. There was no reason for that shot.
Did you notice the camera rotating as he did? That's to indicate that both the Penguin and the Batman are meeting together instead of a villain and a good guy like.
It's interesting film theory, but I think it was just a flabby shot that should have been cut that they thought looked cool because it was like a Dutch angle, and it should have been cut because it ended up deflating that entire fucking scene. And that happens a lot in this movie where things are built up and built up and built up, and you hit that point where it feels good and cathartic and really, really tight, and then it goes on too far, and you're like, wait, hold on, just stop, please stop, like, we're eating the pizza after it's gone cold, and we've already had the really good hot pizza, like, fucking stop, please, like, I don't want this cold pizza. Like, move on to the next scene. Give me more hot pizza.
It reminded me of somebody saying to a studio, I'm going to make a Batman movie and I want you to give me all the budget. And directorially, it's going to be fantastic. And I just need you to give me like no barriers. And they were like, okay, we're going to let you go. Let you do your thing. And then we'll see what we get at the end. There was no final oversight.
Yes.
It's as if a director was able to do everything that they wanted in a movie and didn't have anybody else saying like, hey, that one doesn't quite work as well as it really should. Maybe we should just axe that. And that's why it runs long. I'm really curious to see what happens. It's like when Topher Grace released the Hobbit and he put all three movies together and then he edited it himself. And then he made a one Hobbit movie and it was actually good. Like, that's what this movie will be when somebody will grab this footage, chop it up and down, and then make a really fucking awesome Batman movie.
That's incredibly insightful. And I think that's a really good, like, overall summary of this movie is, for better or for worse, for good and for not so good, this is very much, you can tell, the movie that Matt Reeves wanted to make. And for whatever reason, maybe it's because of the massive failure and all the controversy surrounding the Justice League and whatnot, Matt Reeves feels like he was very much left to his own devices. And I think he's a really fucking good director. But like you said, he needed somebody to reel him in. And there wasn't somebody there. Before we wrap this up, I want to show my work on another thing where I was talking about how it's a remake of The Dark Knight, if you guys are cool with that.
I had one more note that I didn't mention, which was there was
I'll be quick, so go for it.
Mine's really quick too. There is a line in there where R. Patz is just like walking into a room. And I think it was a cop that like pulls out his gun and he says, no guns. And he like shoves it down. And DT did a silent prayer to all the DC gods because Batman says no guns.
Jesus Christ, man. Batman killing somebody is just, that's a line you just don't cross with that character. You can do the character any which way you want to. But the minute Batman starts killing people, you've just fucked up. Like, that's it.
Regardless of the edits and pluses and minuses here, it's really, really hard to argue that this is not a proper Batman.
I agree with Seth. No, I agree.
It's an interesting interpretation of Batman, but we still have never gotten the perfect Batman on screen. This is not it. Maybe if they do a sequel.
No, I don't want them to do a sequel because all they did was tease the Joker, and that's, I don't want another Joker here.
I prefer this iteration of Batman to the Batmans that we've seen before. Like, I like the investigative Batman. I like he's a detective. I like the mortality that they display here.
There's no mortality, though. That's an issue. He's fucking bulletproof and he's bombproof. Like, the tension, there is no tension in this entire movie. That's a problem.
You're right with the tension in terms of his mortality, but I'm saying, like, the mentality of Batman is best portrayed in this film as compared to others, because he's dealing with still his parents. He's dealing with his awkward relationship with Alfred. He's dealing with Selina. He's dealing with all the things that are in front of him and the expectations that he has, not only as Bruce, but as Batman.
Yeah. Which is why the bulletproof and the explosions are fine, because the stakes in this movie are not whether or not Batman's going to survive this. It's all relational.
Yeah, fair. That's very insightful. Yeah.
But I don't care for that, because if you're going to make a superhero about, well, Batman's a superhero. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
he's not a superhero. He's just a rich dude.
You can say that, like, Batman Begins. You can say that The Dark Knight was not a superhero movie. It was more a crime drama with superheroes shoehorned in. And I would think that's apt. What this is it's a character drama that's got superheroes shoehorned into it as well. But it also kind of honestly fails as a character drama, too, because you need those stakes. And so much of this movie is built up in deflation, including the relationships between the characters. The only thing that actually really works and had any sort of tension for me at all in this movie was when Selina finally actually confronts Falcone.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got the gun and she's like chased him through the hallway, because Zoe Kravitz is already well on her way to being a massive star, and she's going to get there because she's fucking amazing. She's just electric. But that's the only bit of tension that I ever experienced in this movie, was her showdown with her father. You could feel that hatred and that anger and whatnot. But okay, can I break down really quickly why this is a remake of The Dark Knight, and then we can move on?
Or you can try.
Okay. I'm just going to gloss over it because we're almost out of time for the segment and we got to go to deep space and whatnot. So, okay, you've got a Batman who is he's still kind of conflicted as to whether or not he wants to be Batman. He's going through the motions because he feels driven to do it because of his past and whatnot. And he feels like he's got something to prove to Gotham, to try and make Gotham better. You've got a villain who communicates all of his demands and his motives via a handheld device while he's torturing his victims, just like the fucking Joker. He's got a lot of the same mannerisms as the Joker. His motive is to fuck up the system and break things up, and also to fuck with the mob for whatever reason. Both the Joker and the Riddler are both fucking doing this. The Joker because he thinks it's funny. The Riddler because he's actually got a fucking vendetta, which isn't actually fully fleshed out, which is kind of bullshit. During his whole thing about fucking with the system and fucking with the mob and going through the motions of his plans, he targets the mayor, he targets the commissioner of police, and he targets somebody high in the judicial system. In this one, it was the DA, and in The Dark Knight, it was one of the judges with the Joker card and whatnot. You've got a Batman who walks around like a tank. He very, very rarely does any ninja shit unless it seems like it's going to be cool for the scene. You've got an Alfred who is largely ineffectual, except when it's very convenient to say, oh, I used to be a soldier, I can help you with this shit. And you've got a climax in this movie where you've got these people in a large structure that are dressed like the villain, and Batman has to try and incapacitate these people using a series of cables. So in the Dark Knight, he had to use his cables to like string everybody up and knock them off the ledges to incapacitate them so they couldn't be a threat anymore. And this one, in Gotham Square Garden, all the Riddler guys with the sniper rifles up in the rafters all have cables. And Batman goes through the motions of incapacitating them one after another and hanging them off the edge with the fucking cables. This movie, whether it realizes it or not, it's a full-on fucking remake of The Dark Knight. It really fucking is. Visually and in terms of story and thematics, it is. Like, I could keep fucking going. Like, I could do another 40 minutes of how this movie basically just unwittingly rips off The Dark Knight. And I don't blame it, but nothing in this movie is wholly original. It's all something we've seen from Batman, even if it thinks it wants to be original and a different, unique telling. And that's not this movie's fault, because we've had 30 fucking years of Batman movies, and everything is old hat at this point. But what this movie needed was another 10 years removed from The Dark Knight. Because doing a movie that was this grounded in terms of reality, it's just way too fucking close.
How do you feel about Alfred teaching Batman to fight instead of Liam Neeson in the wilderness?
They didn't have enough time in this movie, despite the fact that it was 3 hours to get into why Batman knows how to fight. and he actually doesn't really fucking know how to fight, which is why he's wearing a bulletproof suit. But Alfred teaching him to fight, just Batman's a brawler, which is kind of cool in this movie, but there's nothing like ninja or scary or...
You notice he also gravitates towards all of the shadows in every shot, which I thought was a nice touch.
But he gravitates towards the shadows, and he's like, yeah, I'm a symbol. Like, they're all afraid of me because they think I'm in that doorway or that alleyway. And then when he comes out, he just, like, walks out. Like, hey, guys, I'm not a ninja. I'm just a fucking dude in an iron suit.
Right,
like,
but the scary part is not the guy walking out of a shadow. The scary part is the guy walking out of a shadow in a place where there should not be people. He's not supposed to be able to get in there. That's the scary part.
I agree with the ambiance that you're talking about, but the first thing that broke me for this movie, and I mentioned earlier on that the first 30 minutes could have been no dialogue, no narration. The thing that broke me was they went into a subway, and it's the, and I even stand by my standpoint before where this could be no narration, no dialogue, nothing, no, like just city sounds. And the guy that has his, he's got half of his face painted, which is indicative enough that he's like on his way, he's about to be initiated. And then he's got to go jump this guy. And then out comes Batman from the shadows. This isn't one of those situations like you were just talking about, Seth. It's just like, yeah, he got into the subway. Big whoop, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? And you're meant to be like, whoa, here comes Batman. He's like, and everybody else backs off. And some random dude's like, oh, I'm going to fight this guy. Like, it threw me off completely. Like, here comes, he has established enough of a reputation in this city that everyone else in this thing says like, nope, I don't want to be involved. And then for the trailer, they needed him to go and confront him and just like, whack.
You're right, because that whole intro is everybody reacting to the bat symbol up in the sky, the bat signal, and everybody being terrified and deciding they're not going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to like turn away from it. And then it deflates that by having his first confrontation in the movie be a gangster, like a thug who's probably in his early 20s, be like, yeah, I'll fight Batman. Like, this movie wants to have its cake and eat it too, and it lays out this whole fucking buffet table of cake, and it just tries to eat all of it. And like, it just doesn't work.
It wasn't reined in. Is what it comes down to, I think. Like, it's
a lot of really good ideas, and a lot of those really good ideas aren't cohesive with each other, and that's the problem with this movie.
It wanted to be a Marvel movie and like Blade Runner 2049. Like, you can't put those two together. Like, you can't make...
I wish you could. Fuck.
Yeah, and that's what it was trying to be. And I respect the movie for going there. Like, I will not call The Batman a bad movie.
No.
I would not go there. I would just say that it has so many things going for it, and the setting feels so lived in, which is probably my favorite part about this movie, is that it just feels so real, and it's so much a comic book adaptation in a city that was created for the film, as opposed to like a stamp over something that we knew. So like, that's what I loved about this, is that every bit of the production design in this movie, I loved. I loved Wayne Manor. I loved the Gotham City streets. I even like the suit.
I hate the suit.
I know you don't hate it, but I like the suit.
I like the suit too.
I like the suit. I like the Batmobile. I love all of the things that they tried to make new and unique and real and lived in. Super into that. The acting, great. The intersection of the plots that they were trying to make happen, super into it. I just think it was just way too much.
Yeah.
It's like when people talk about the Harry Potter books, and now the fifth one, J.K. Rowling was like on deadline. So she wrote like a giant doorstopper of a book, and they had to push it out. But in reality, that book really did not need to be half as long as it was.
There is a letter, I believe, from Ernest Hemingway. Don't quote me on that. That opens with, I'm sorry this is such a long letter. I would have written less if I had more time.
Yeah, love that.
This movie actually was kind of rushed, and they had a lot of problems with COVID and having to stop and start production.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe more time would have produced a better movie.
Well, and this movie has all of the pieces to be an absolutely 100% top tier film.
It's just got all the extra pieces still jammed in there, though.
It's ripe and ready for plucking for folks like us who have a podcast to just break it down in every way possible. But I don't think it holds up in the same way that some other films such as The Dark Knight do. Like it doesn't do quite the same thing.
Yeah. I think this movie is not going to have the staying power and the longevity that The Dark Knight has. I think it's an okay Batman movie. It's an okay movie. It's just not great. And I don't think it's got that moxie, that finished, polished quality to it that The Dark Knight has that will make it stand the test of time. I think once we get another pretty okay Batman movie, this is kind of just going to be shuffled back into like, oh, another Batman movie. That was pretty good. It was better than the fucking Justice League movie. But, you know, it's going to be like Spider-Man or like Batman, where the new thing is going to be the new hotness. And we're going to forget about the thing that came before it, unless it's fucking terrible. But
what you're saying is we need a director's cut.
Well, I don't want a director's cut because I'm afraid it's going to be 9 hours long. But we do need a cut of it. We do need the fat and the flabbiness trimmed from this movie. Absolutely.
You know who edits videos?
Topher Grace?
All of us. I mean, you should just edit it together how you want it, man. I'd like to see that.
If I could get the raw footage separate from the soundtrack, I totally fucking would, man. If somebody could rip that and give it to me, I would cut this movie down to like 90 minutes. It would be choice.
90 minutes? I would pay money to see you try to cut this to 90 minutes.
Oh, fuck yeah. 90 minutes, totally.
If you guys could change one thing from this movie, I'm curious what it would be. Like if you could mix something up.
More Andy Serkis as Alfred.
That's a really, really good take. I agree with you.
Because I liked almost everything else about this movie.
I have to change just one thing. Can I say like something broad, like edit it better?
No. You can, but you need to be specific.
Okay. Well, it just needs to be tighter. Like, okay, how the fuck did Batman's loud-ass fucking car get parked next to that drug plant without nobody noticing? And then as soon as he turns it on and it's idling, everybody freaks out because it sounds like a fucking caged lion. Like the whole movie's like that. Yeah. It's like, oh, that looks and sounds really fucking cool. But wait a second. When I think about it for a second, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
I don't know. This movie is a Batman movie for me.
Mine would be, to jump in on my own question, mine would be to fix the Riddler.
Yeah.
So like the villain is the show, you know, the villain is the reason that we are going to the movies to watch this, because we know what we're going to get with Batman. Ostensibly, we know what we're going to get with this big budget movie script. Even watching trailers and understanding this is a more edgy, dark and investigative noir Batman, we know what we were going to get. And the big question mark, ironically enough, is the Riddler. And the Riddler should have been, I think, a little bit more front and center. Like, we should have had a little bit more of a sneak peek and make him less of a Unabomber, less of a, like, serial killer, weird, awkward vibes.
Well, it was the awkward vibes, and that's what deflated it for me, is we get, like, his introduction, the first scene where he is in the mayor's house, and the mayor turns and walks away, and there's the Riddler, like, front and center, and the lightning flashes, and his goggles go off. Fucking gorgeous shot. Holy shit, the Riddler's terrifying. Like, this is fucking dope. I'm really digging it. And we get more of that. And it's like, okay, he's scary and he's intimidating, but he's also pretty much just fucking Heath Ledger's Joker. But then, again, like we said before, we turn that corner where it's like, what is this supposed to be? Like, was he supposed to be, like, Batman's equal mentally? Like, he was supposed to challenge him with all these puzzles. And then it flips a corner where it's like, oh, he's just this angry kid without any really clear motive. And he was manipulating Batman into doing his dirty work, which is also kind of clever. But we don't ever get any clear motive or any clear idea of who the Riddler is and why he's doing. Why the fuck did he blow up the seawall? Like, what was his motivation for doing that?
And also, can we just get a little bit of insight? We don't need to hear anything from him. We don't need any dialogue. Like I was saying earlier, like, we don't even need any dialogue for this. We just need to see what he's doing in preparation for this. Like, we can get a little insight. Give me a little backstory into what the Riddler is doing.
Well, you can make him mysterious, but don't have the resolution of that mystery be, he's an autistic kid who's angry. He's a 4chan internet like social pariah.
Incel.
I wasn't gonna say incel because he's not really incel. Like there's nothing incel about him. Like he's not misogynistic and talking about women, but he's just like a fucking wannabe anonymous like 4chan kid, and that's fucking boring. Because you can never bring the Riddler back as a villain in this movie because it's completely deflated. Whereas like we all wanted the Joker to come back in The Dark Knight, the sequel to that. There's nothing left. He's a mentally ill kid. And that's just like, what's the fucking point? Like, you may as well have just killed him off because you essentially have anyway, like thematically and in terms of screenwriting, like you've done away with his character in the most like anticlimactic way possible. You've taken this big, like imposing, scary fucking guy, and you've just pulled the fucking curtain back, and it's like, oh, it's just a scared, angry, vengeful kid who really doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah, don't you Wizard of Oz me?
Exactly. Yeah. I want it to be scary because he's a fucking mad genius who could fuck shit up with like his mind alone. Like the antithesis of Batman's brute strength is the Riddler's just wild intellect. I don't know.
If you ever pull this movie back up, listen to it with good headphones because the sound design is unlike any superhero movie I've ever heard.
It's really fucking good.
Spectacular.
On every technical level besides editing, this is a really well-crafted movie. It's just in terms of the intangibles where everything kind of falls apart.
It's like a weird movie to break down because it's funny that we're all talking and we're singing the praises of the editing, the acting, the sound design, the production design. And then really digging into just like the story doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
At least DT and I are. I don't know. It works for Seth.
I'm glad you like it, Seth. I really wanted to like it. And I don't have like a grudge against this movie like I do like the Last Jedi. Like this isn't a movie where I was like, fuck this fucking movie. Like I fucking hate it. It should never have been made. It's just, it's an interesting, not quite failure. It's just something that didn't come together for me, but I can see the desire to make something really good. And it just didn't happen for them, unfortunately.
I'm looking forward to that 90-minute cut. Like the edit that will come after this is going to be choice.
I can't wait to see you try to cut this in half.
Dude, like I said, you take out Selena and you've got like half an hour of the movie gone right there. Like it would not be hard to...
Well, yeah, dude. If you take out any B-plot, that's 2/3 of the movie. Like that's how B-plots work.
But the B-plots don't have any like...
I'm of the opinion you need to have Selena there. You have to have the B-story.
I don't think you do.
Oh, DT.
I disagree with you. It needs to be there. It's a palate cleanser. You need
everything
it.
That is relevant to the Riddler happens with Jim and Bruce being buddies. Everything that has to do with Falcone has to do with Selina, and you can largely see this fucking movie. And again, I'm trying not to hate it because I don't want to hate it, but there's so much here that just doesn't tie together because why the fuck does Riddler want to take down the mob? We find out he was like an orphan, and it's like, okay, are we going to find out that like he was the son of the reporter that Thomas Wayne had killed to cover up his story with Falcone? And like the Riddler and Bruce are two sides of the same coin. Like they both lost their fathers and their parents on the same week. And the Riddler wants revenge against Falcone for killing his father. And then we learned that like Falcone also had Thomas Wayne killed too. And I was thinking like, that's really fucking cliche, but at least maybe this is finally going somewhere. And the movie just fucking doesn't do anything at all. Like there's no connection between Bruce and the Riddler at all. And it's like build up, build up, build up, and no fucking catharsis. And it's like blue balls the movie.
The best scene in the movie and the one that should have been the linchpin is when they finally meet face to face and he's in prison. We got the Riddler and he's Batman at that time. He's wearing the cowl and they're talking. And there's a shift in that scene that happens and Paul Dano is he's fantastic in the scene where it shifts so quickly because he's like, we're the same, we're the same, we're the same. And then Pat says, no, we're not the same. And then wham, everything changes. And that's literally the axe on this entire like relationship. It's the turning point for it's the linchpin. After that, it just disappears.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like there's nothing that there are no repercussions for this very quintessential and important scene. Like it's like a screenwriter was like, I know what needs to happen here. There are no repercussions, no ramifications for it.
No, the Riddler's motive is he was an orphan and he grew up in a really terrible environment and that sucks. But his act of wanting to get revenge on Falcone, and like nothing fucking works. There is no anchor for this character. It's just things happening. The Riddler does the thing, and he does the thing with Batman, and then he gets pissed off and he starts crying when Batman doesn't want to be his friend afterwards. And it just doesn't, there's no structure to it. There's no structure to what's going on. So we have like closing thoughts, even though we've had like 45 minutes of closing thoughts, like,
all right, here's your closing thoughts. DT didn't like it. Seth liked it. And I'm in between.
I took the liberty of turning off and plugging in Goldblum's AI consciousness so that he would not interrupt this conversation, because I knew it was going to be a long one.
Do you want to turn him on real quick just so he can get his little interruption in?
No, for his sake? He needs to simmer. I honestly don't want to turn him on for like a while. He hates it when I do this. But
if we don't have the chimes, then how will the readers know to skip the next minute and a half of this podcast? Or listeners? It's starting to feel like Matt Reeves edited this podcast.
Well, DT, you got your hands on it now. You can cut it in half.
I'm going to cut this podcast in half. It's going to be a 30-minute long podcast, yeah.
You could just cut the B-plots of me and Alex talking, and it would just be you. The one single main plot.
Block out the next 72 hours of my life so I can edit this.
Yeah, let's get some messages. I'm going to leave Goldblum off because I'm frankly scared to turn it back on.
Hello, I'm Simon Ford.
And I'm Jack Morrell.
And we've got some important information for you. We're launching a brand new podcast, and it's for true crime addicts just like you. It's called Psycho Killer, and it's available right now wherever you get your podcasts. Now, Jack here, he was 30 years in the job, so he knows what he's talking about.
And Simon, when he gets his teeth into a story, he's like a terrier. Plus, we'll be having special guests who've been there, seen it, done it, and got that T-shirt.
So, come with us on our new adventure. Subscribe right now to Psycho Killer, and we'll see you on the dark side. Run, 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 run.
Ba-ding, ding, ding.
So, Alex, when you weren't spending 72 hours watching The Batman, I'm assuming you were also doing some Deep Space Recon. Do you have something you want to share with us?
There's plenty of stuff. I've got lots of things that I want to share with you guys. Oh, I've got so many books to tell you guys about, but the one that I want to talk about is a YouTube channel. And it's a channel called Charisma on Command. Basically, it's just this guy that just tells you how to talk good.
I could use that.
He's not like a pickup artist, is he? Like,
no, it's not even that. It's
Charisma on Demand sounds like he's like approaching women in strip malls and being like, hey, and like they fake it where like he gets with them and he wants you to send him like $99.95 for his like DVDs on how to pick up women.
Also, here's this THX hotline that you should call. Charisma on Command, it's kind of like a psychological sort of breakdown of how we communicate with one another and why certain things that you say are much more well received as opposed to other things. And then he'll use celebrity interviews with talk show hosts and so on and so forth as reference points. So why do people not really engage with Brie Larson in terms of her like engagement with talk show hosts or with media or whatever? And this is why. Or how does your posture reflect on your ability to communicate with one another? It's just a really insightful YouTube channel that this guy's just like, here we go. We've got 5 points and I'm going to tell you why Robert Downey Jr. is so charming. And it's here are 5 things that tell you about that. It's because he makes eye contact. It's because he's self-deprecating. It's because of this, that, and the other thing. It's just a really cool show. I found it very insightful. It's not something that I'm like trying to implement in my regular and everyday life. You know, maybe it will indicate to you one thing or the other that you're like, yeah, actually, I realize that I tend to, you know, cross my arms and lean back and kind of like frown at people while I'm having a conversation, or I'm interjecting when I shouldn't be, or whatever. But it's interesting to see this. It's like seeing somebody break down the psychology of mental and physical interaction just via conversation.
It's interesting.
Really cool channel that I found very insightful, Charisma on Command.
Cool. I'm going to check it out. I've got loads of charisma to spare, but I can always, you know, brush up on the fundamentals. Why are you guys laughing?
Do we have a listener question?
We always have a listener question.
We do have at least one listener, yes.
Thank you.
Mark knows who he is. Mark sends in a wonderful question for us to answer. But before we get to that, Seth, do you want to tell the people how they can send in their own questions?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do it quickly because we're at Matt Reeves levels.
Wait, hold on. Seth, you're not supposed to make those jokes. You like the movie.
I do like the movie. And I would also like a 3-hour version of this podcast. But just because I like it doesn't mean everybody does. Okay. Space Castle Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can hit us at Gmail at spacecastlepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know all this stuff. We have a hotline, of which the number I will never remember, but it's a voicemail hotline. You can ask us questions there. DT, do you want to tell them the number?
Yes, I always remember the hotline number because I have it written down in front of me. That hotline number, which you can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year with all your crazy late night drunken ramblings about pop culture. One, if you're dialing outside the United States, 970-591-3577. We look forward to hearing from you.
And so begins my quest to get a question in on our podcast using impressions wherein Seth and DT do not recognize my own voice.
I believe in you. I'm notoriously terrible at recognizing voices, so like your odds are very good.
Seth has voice blindness.
I have voice blindness. I can't see shit.
From now on, DT will be like, it was you, wasn't it, you asshole?
Every question. I'm just going to get paranoid. I'm just going to be paranoid. Every listener question is going to be like, was this you, Alex? You have to tell me. Otherwise, it's entrapment.
Let's get to Mark's question. Mark had a really great question. Mark's question is a hot dog a sandwich?
An age-old question.
That's an age-old question. Hot dog is a sandwich. Hot dog is meat and condiments and cheese and more condiments and onions between a piece of bread of some kind. It is a sandwich.
Nope.
What?
I disagree.
Fuck off.
I disagree.
Show your work.
Alex, look. You need to be specific because I am going to fight you on this.
Yes.
I know I'm going to be the odd one out here. I figured this would be the case. So Seth, what you're saying is you think a hot dog is a sandwich?
Absolutely. A hot dog is a sandwich.
I think that a hot dog is a hot dog. I think a hot dog is a sandwich and is a hot dog. Like, I think a hot dog,
what,
is its own thing. It has created its own lane.
You're putting it in a subcategory.
No. No, a hot dog is a hot dog.
It's like not every rectangle is a square, but every square is a rectangle type thing. Like
you said you think a hot dog is a sandwich and a hot dog. That's a
No. Is heavy metal music rock music?
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
What?
That's a subcategory. Alex, right. That's how subcategories work.
So it's the same thing. Are we all agreeing? Is that what I'm realizing now?
I don't think you realize you're agreeing with us that a hot dog is a sandwich.
I don't think that you realize you're saying that a hot dog is a sandwich.
I said a hot dog is a hot dog. It's in its own lane. It's transcended. It's transcended the sandwich and become its own thing. Heavy metal is heavy metal. It's not just rock music anymore. It's heavy metal.
But it's still rock music. Alex, describe to me a scenario in which a hot dog is not a sandwich. Seth, let's let him work this out on his own.
I'm not disagreeing with you guys here. This is not a quiz for Alex. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm saying hot dog is not a sandwich anymore. It is its own thing now.
Describe to me how.
What defining quality says it is not a sandwich?
Could you qualify it as a sandwich? Yes, you could. Yes, I agree that you could qualify it as a sandwich. Now, I think a hot dog has transcended that. A hot dog is now hot dog.
Alex,
I don't understand.
If I can open up a restaurant that is just hot dogs, that has condiments and everything else, and hey, this is a hot dog shop. Yeah.
You could open up a restaurant that only serves hamburgers. That doesn't make a hamburger not a sandwich.
You can open up a fucking pizzeria and say, no, never mind. That doesn't work.
Guys, this isn't the semantics podcast, okay? Like, I'm just saying, you are
arguing semantics. You've literally been arguing semantics for the last several minutes. It is a fucking sandwich.
Have you listened to this podcast? It is, of course, this is a semantics podcast. Have you even heard our show before?
Okay, I think you're arguing for the sake of arguing, but you haven't shown your work as to how a hot dog is not a sandwich. Give me one defining quality that says a hot dog is not a sandwich.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I said a hot dog is a sandwich and it qualifies as such, but it also has transcended to become something that is not a sandwich. It is a hot dog. A hot dog is not a sandwich.
It's still just a sandwich.
No, that's not how categories work though, Alex. Of course it's a different thing because different things are different things. Like every sandwich is not the same. So a hot dog is an individual thing. Yes. But if you're going to make it its own category, it needs to be able to be excluded from another category. That's what makes categories separate.
Look, people understand a sandwich is meat between buns.
Also large swaths of the internet. Continue on. Please.
That's it. Thank you for listening to Spacecast.
All right, fuck it. It is your clubhouse and hours for all things nerdy. We want to thank our good friend Brian Levitt for co-writing our theme song, D's Notes. We also want to invite you to become a Galactonaut on our Patreon at patreon.com/spacecastlepod.
Join our Discord. Hang out with us. We do live streams and stuff there, and we just talk about this, the same stuff we just talked about for 2.5 hours. And also other things, and it's a grand old time.
It is a fun Discord, and it's free, not like other people who charge you to try and get on their Discord.
We're not about the gatekeeping.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Shockingly, there's a lot of stuff happening in the world of podcasting right now that's a little...
Which, I don't know about the podcast thing, and I kind of get it for other things. Like, I'm part of a couple of Discords that are like, you know, for development of specific tools.
Yeah, like how to blow up seawalls in large cities and how to fool Batman into doing your bidding.
And I understand why, like, you want to have a little more discretion on who's in a community like that, but ours is not that way.
Well, we have discretion. Like, we're not going to suffer any dickheads, but we're not going to make you pay money to come listen to his talk. We're not famous enough for that yet. Anyway. My name's DT.
My name is Red Wine Alex, part-time librarian, master and space commander, Winnebago thief, King Killer Dude, Molotov Donghammer.
I'm Seth. Still, to this day, haven't changed not even once. Bye, I love you. Ba-ding-da-ding-ding! Ding, ding.